The United States has been urging American citizens to leave Middle Eastern countries like Lebanon, Iran, and Israel, and will loan Americans the money to buy the ticket if needed. Ironically, the U.S. is more than willing to give $75 billion to Ukraine, $3 billion to Israel, and $100 million to Palestine. I'm Skynell Hughes, and on this edition of 360 View, we are going to ask, is there something wrong about a country willing to fund a war but not fund their own citizens escaping it? Let's get started. It seems there is not a major military conflict presently the United States, as well as other Western countries, do not like. On one hand, we had a horrible event happen, one which no country wants, where there is a well-organized mass attack by another on its citizens, causing chaos, violence, and death. However, while it seemed like Israel was going to put this extremely full-court press back on Gaza in response, and solely on their own, several weeks later, while there is a strong military operation happening, I feel like Israel has backed down from the original, we are doing this our way and on our own strategy. It's almost like they started and looked back and realized they needed some allies. If what I'm reading is correct, maybe Israel assessed whether or not their allies, like the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, and members of the EU, were actually prepared with military support, including boots on the ground. Now, there was a lot of talk, but did Israel realize some of her allies might not be in as strong of a position to support them as they once were? Or is this because Western countries are finding their own population of citizens and elected officials split on whose support they should be going to? Well, let's ask our panel of educated guests. Steve Malzberg, conservative commentator and radio host. Steve Gill, political analyst and radio host. And finally, Michael Maloof, national security contributor, former senior security policy analyst in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me on this issue. Very, very important. Obviously, everything's changing by the day. I want to actually get started off with you, Michael Maloof. Have you noticed a shift or change, do you think, in Israel's military strategy from the first day to the present?
If you believe the rhetoric that you're hearing, it is that they're going to try and destroy Hamas. I think that's ill-advised because it's not going to happen, number one. And you're going to decimate the area, and they have no day-after plan with Gaza once they finish what their operation is. And the United States basically is sort of at the mercy of what Netanyahu decides to do. He's really got the United States in a very precarious position that we cannot be, we can give advice, but he's clearly not taking it. And as a consequence, he feels that he can do whatever he wants. And we're already hearing his ministers talking about cutting off the head of the snake, and that's Iran. So I'm really concerned about things escalating very quickly to Iran. And I would add one other thing. Look out for Hezbollah. Things could really begin to open up on the northern front. And we're going to be seeing a ratcheting up by Nasrallah, the Secretary General. The problem here is that he promised that if Lebanese civilians are killed, he's going to start doing the same thing to Israeli civilians. Well, it just happened. So I'm looking for a potential escalation to occur here almost any time from the north, and we've got to be very, very concerned about that.
To Michael Maloof's point, Gil, on this one, can you really take out Hamas? Can we actually eradicate Hamas without having high unfortunate victims in the case in Gaza? And is Hezbollah right attached to them?
I think you can take out a majority of their foot soldiers in Gaza. But as we know, their leadership is staying in fancy hotels outside of Gaza. They can recruit, they can repay, they can rebuild. So you can't eliminate them unless you literally cut off the head of the snake. And right now, the heads of their snakes are living in luxury while a lot of people, Palestinian civilians and their fighters, are dying in Gaza.
Steve Malzberg, do you think that Israel went into this conflict? Obviously, it was supposedly a very big surprise. I really still have questions about how you could have this organized of an event happen and not have anybody really understand. We know the Egyptians knew a little bit and tried to warn. But do you think Israel went into this conflict with greater expectations of her allies than what has been reality?
I think they went in with a plan, and they've been sticking to the plan, and I think they're going to accomplish what they set out to do. Look, nobody knows better than Israel that Hamas is not just in Gaza, but they're going to eradicate Hamas in Gaza. And I think the U.S. is there with their ships and their submarine, as we've revealed to the world, to make sure that if to warn that if Hezbollah gets involved at the behest of Iran, then the United States will become more involved. I mean, we've already had our troops attacked in Syria and Iraq by surrogates of Iran. We responded for the first time, and it's about time, the other day. But look, this is a country under attack. We've had, if you listen to Al Arabiya TV, Lebanese TV, and on RT, three different Hamas leaders. One of them said, we're going to do this again and again and again and again. The other one said, oh, it's not our responsibility to take care of the Palestinian civilians in Gaza. They're refugees. That's the UN's responsibility. And the other one said, look at independence throughout history. And he cited all kinds of how many millions of people in each situation he cited have civilians died, sacrificed for independence. And he said the Palestinian people are no different. So this is Hamas in their own words saying, screw the Palestinian people. We want this, we want that. So, I mean, Israel's doing what they have to do. Hamas is to blame for everything. And Israel's going to keep going. And I don't think Israel's ever requested or what it would want boots on the ground from the United States. That's never been a request of Israel. And I don't see that ever happening.
Michael?
Yeah. To Steve's point, Hezbollah has pledged to protect Hamas. Hamas, in the eyes of Hezbollah, is looked upon as the resistance, axis of resistance. They are going to defend Hamas at all costs. That's why I think an escalation in the very near future is almost imminent. And I'm hearing this from people who were weary of it, but now are very concerned from Lebanon to Iran, and they're watching this very closely. They look upon them as resistance fighters, and Hezbollah will defend defend Hamas. Also, Nasrallah in his speech last Friday stated he didn't care about U.S. carriers. He had things waiting for them, which indicates to me that they may have missiles that can probably knock out carriers. They have that capability, and that's worrisome. The question is, are we going to call us bluff?
Well, that's it. Are we seeing restraint, do you think, currently from Hamas, from Hezbollah, from Iran? Are we seeing restraint right now in trying to, they'll go up to the line, but they're not going to cross enough to get into a full-fledged war with the United States or the West?
I think they're fighting defensively in Gaza, so they're not you know, withholding anything. They're still holding hostages. They're not releasing any to get aid to humanitarian aid in Gaza. They're not showing any willingness to even negotiate the release of real bulk loads of hostages. We don't know of the life and the condition of the hostages, and they're not doing anything to provide that. And as Michael pointed out, Hezbollah is sitting there just itching for a fight, and I don't think has been any kind of pushback against them or Iran. There have been 50 to 60 strikes on U.S. Facilities in Syria and in Iraq. No real response from the United States. So if there's any bluff being called, they're calling our bluff. And so far, Joe Biden's ducking for cover.
Which brings me to my point with you, Malzberg, on this case. Are they basically calling the bluff of the United States? I still keep saying that I feel like the United States military was expected to do more. Yes, we can put our warships out there, but you continue. What is the red line before the United States really gets involved in this besides, I mean, like you said, our soldiers have been fired upon. Is it going to take flag-draped coffins coming down from the region before we do more?
With this administration, you never know. I would like to have, I would have hoped that we would have done more already, that we would have sent a blunt message in our response to the first missiles that came, to the first time our barracks were hit, in Iraq and in Syria, to the second time, to the third time, to the fourth time, and we've elected to do nothing. I mean, your guess is as good as mine as to what it's going to take. But I think that if they push too far, and if Hezbollah does get involved, I think you're going to see it's going to evolve into a larger scale war. And with, I know Michael for a long time. I always enjoyed seeing him at RT and talking to him, and I respect him. But so what is Israel supposed to do? Not eradicate the people who will come in again and again and again, in their own words, and slaughter babies and women and children and take hostages because of this or because of that or because it'll escalate? Look, Iran is a terrorist nation. The Ayatollah is probably the biggest terrorist going, and they have to be stopped one way or another, one day or another. And if this is going to lead to that, then so be it.
So, Michael, does this become a proxy war right now, sort of like what we're seeing in Israel and Gaza, is really a proxy war possibly of the United States and Iran?
Well, I think inevitably the United States will get engaged if there's any form of escalation. However, having said that, we did not respond to the shooting down of our reconnaissance aircraft over in international waters in Yemen. So the point that Steve is making about the tepidness of this administration, I think it's going to be a very lackluster approach. If Hezbollah gets into it, certainly they got targets of sites that they're going to try and hit with aircraft. There'll be no boots on the ground. But at the same time, this conflict is not going to be solved ultimately militarily. It's got to be a political solution. And we've got to start getting some adult supervision in here to try and tamp down this. Now, there are efforts, and you're hearing it from the you don't want the Sunnis and the Shia to unite. That would be devastating. Right now, it's just the Shia. However, if Hezbollah enters into the conflict, you're going to have a million Shia from all the countries in the region descending upon Israel, in addition to all the missiles they have buried. And it would be something we would not outcome we would not want. And as a consequence, I think it's really important for us to start working on a political resolution of this. The problem is Netanyahu.
Hold on, I'm going to stop you right there, because I want to hear the problem right when we get back, because we need to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue with our panel and look at the different responses given by Western countries in the present Israel conflict versus the response 2 years ago with Ukraine. Stick around. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes, and you're watching the 360 View. We are back and looking at the conflict in Israel and Gaza with our guest, Steve Malzberg, conservative commentator and radio host, Steve Gill, political analyst and radio host, and Michael Maloof, national security contributor, former senior security policy analyst in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. I stopped you at the break before we went into it, and you were going to tell us.
Yeah, the problem is, right now, we have a potential for a settlement of some kind if Netanyahu will listen. The Saudis and the UAE still want that normalization. They want to enforce the Abraham Accords. That will result in a political settlement. However, they want the Palestinian issue resolved first. Okay, that gets back to whether you're going to have a one state or two state solution. That is something the political types need to work on. The problem is that Netanyahu needs to survive politically and personally. And as long as he has this war, and then he can escalate it, he's got this so-called unified government. It'll keep him in office indefinitely. And this is what I'm really worried about, because the minute one of his more radical ministers walk, his government falls, and he's then exposed to legal liabilities for previous charges of corruption. He doesn't want that. He and his wife, both. So it's to his benefit to try to keep this war going. That's why I think he knew. You pointed out a little earlier, the Egyptians had told him, and he chose not to listen. He knew something was brewing. He probably didn't realize the intensity of the attack, what it was going to be like. And I think that really set off the alarms and really got the Israeli people saying, do something.
But Steve, I have been told that if the Israelis put down their guns today, or if the Israelis put their guns down today, it would make no difference. If the Hamas put down their guns today, there would be a peaceful state. Can we ever go back to how it was before? Is there ever going to be that trust on one side from Israel to Gaza that they're not going to have a day like they did a few weeks ago?
Well, Israel basically pulled out of Gaza and said, look, you guys can have it. Build the infrastructure, build the hospitals. Here's billions of dollars that aid has flowed in. They haven't built hospitals. They haven't built infrastructure. They haven't built water and electricity. They've built missiles and bombs and fired them into Israeli civilian communities. They're doing that today. Now, all the national media keeps focusing on, the Israelis bombed an area in Gaza and some civilians may have died today. They are continuing to fire missiles into civilian communities in Israel. Hezbollah is doing the same thing. Only one side gets attacked in the national media and the international media, and it's always Israel.
Steve, do you agree with that? Do you believe that you would think, considering how much the Western government seemed to be on the side of Israel, at least in the speak, but the media, do you believe that the media has taken a side in this argument?
Oh, my God. The media, forever, Israel is always held to a higher standard. Israel could do no right, and the terrorists are called militants, whatever, they're treated with respect. It's absolutely evident all over the entire media, 99% of the journals. We just found out CNN ended an affiliation with a freelance journalist that they use who was seen carrying a grenade, allegedly, on a motorcycle as he went in with Hamas and took pictures of them launching the attack. And there's accusations that other media outlets also were involved in advance warning. But let me just say this. To imply that Benjamin Netanyahu sacrificed his own people, didn't think it would be that many, but he was willing to sacrifice so he could stay out of trouble, is an example of the media blaming Israel, blaming Netanyahu, when the terrorist scum Nazis are to blame. And as far as a two-state solution, the moderate in all this is Mahmoud Abbas. Oh, if only Mahmoud Abbas was running Gaza. The Congress just passed a bill. It's been going on for decades. They teach their children in textbooks. They teach them on TV shows for kids to hate the Jews and more. And as long as that's the society, there's not going to be peace. Have you seen the Hamas camps for kids? This is insanity. No one talk about the media. No one talks about it. They teach their kids to hate and kill, that martyrdom is the way. You can't have peace.
But the one thing I have to ask you on that, Steve, the Mossad is probably the second best intelligence in the world, and they say supposedly to the CIA, we can debate that. You cannot think that there was not more sort of a warning. This could not have been a complete surprise considering how well orchestrated it is. And Egypt has said that they told Netanyahu this was coming. Some might say we had warnings that 9/11 was going to. We had warnings that we had terrorists here that were training in our planes. We had been warned.
Hindsight's always 2020. Oh. Hindsight's always 2020. And again, when they're training 2,500 people to do it, you should get an inkling. When they're doing parachuting training, they're doing it somewhere. And if we're not keeping eyes on Iran where they're doing their training, we should be.
So this is a major fault in the intelligence, at least to tip off of this. Where did this come from?
I think it was a major intelligence failure. Let me amend that. I think the intelligence people knew. They probably told Netanyahu, and he chose to ignore the warnings. How do you know where a specific Hamas commander lives in the middle of Gaza, in the middle of nowhere, and yet you don't know that there's all this training going on? I mean, there's something wrong with that. And we have eyes all over Iran, and we didn't know that. We didn't see it. They have the same eyes. And so how could they not know any of this? And I would add one other thing. Iran, I've heard that Iran said, well, we didn't know anything about it. U.S. intelligence says, well, Iran didn't know anything about it. Well, I have heard that people who know, who are linked in with IRGC say, we knew about it 10 days beforehand, the attack.
And that's my thing with you, Steve. I understand. It was so well organized. It's not taking any of the blame away from, I think, Gaza and what the Hamas that did this horrible act, but it's going, how was there not more of a warning considering there had to be a lot of training that went into this, a lot of preparation that went into. But I do have to bring this back home, and I do want to ask, Steve, do you think Western countries actually care about their own citizens in foreign countries in times like this?
I think I'm a little shocked because back to the media and foreign media, you would think they would be on constantly talking about the hostages and demanding the release and saying, you know, agreeing that any ceasefire or anything like that could not even, it's a non-starter until the hostages are released. I could go by this country as an example. How many times have you heard it without questions coming up from the media, and it's only once in a while, the mention of our hostages? Release them. Hamas must release them. Get them out. Here's an example. Every day that they, at the White House press briefing, they should hold up a picture of one of our hostages and explain who they are. It just doesn't make any sense. It's very disappointing and discouraging.
Well, I think something else that doesn't make sense to me, Steve Gill, is that unlike the first week of the conflict that we saw between Russia and Ukraine, where it seemed politicians on both sides of the aisle were 100% united against Russia, still didn't have all the information, still definitely media taking a side. Brands in the West were very much united against Russia. You saw bank accounts shutting down. Everything was stopped. But why are you kind of not seeing that same unity in support of Israel in this case, since they are considered to be the victim of a major terrorist attack on that day? Israel's been one of the top allies of the United States. You would have thought you would have seen some of that same mass organization that came out against Russia possibly happening against Hamas and the terrorists that caused this whole event to happen.
I think as you're seeing in the streets in the U.S. and in major capitals around the world, the thousands, tens of thousands that are turning out supporting these despicable, barbaric Hamas terrorists has created a political problem for folks like the Biden administration who are trying to thread a needle of not wanting to offend the pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas political apparatus and at the same time cater to their Jewish base. I think Joe Biden got about 70% of the Muslim vote 4 years ago. There are some polls that show he's at 17 to 20% approval in the Muslim community. He's trying to make sure he placates that base before he gets cost an election.
How would this have been different right now, Michael? I wonder if there was not the conflict going on now almost 2 years for Ukraine and Russia, if that had all been settled, if we'd had peace in that, how would this be different today with what's going on with Israel and Gaza?
Well, we would need another war soon enough. So this one came along just in time. And so that's why you're seeing this dilemma. It just so happens that the Israelis have and have greater much better lobbying group in Congress than the Ukrainians do, and besides that, Ukrainians have a history of a lot of corruption. We're seeing a lot of the arms that go into Ukraine winding up in Mexico with the cartels. How does that happen?
You know. Well, and you're seeing a lot of the arms possibly that's on the floor. This Malzberg, I'm coming to you on this. You see a lot of those same arms happening, being carried by a lot of the Hamas that, you know, maybe we left in Afghanistan or unaccountable for in Ukraine. How do you think this battle would be different if there was actually, had we had a peace agreement between Russia and Ukraine, like was originally supposed to be brokered those first few weeks? Today, would we have had better intelligence to say that this was going to be coming to Israel?
Well, first of all, let me just say that I can't sit here as a Jew and not take notice. I know he didn't mean it, but the powerful Jewish lobby, they get $3 billion a year for Israel. If you add it up, if Israel got $3 billion a year for the 75 years they've been in existence, it wouldn't equal what Ukraine has already gotten. And in this package, the $14 billion to Israel with their great lobbyists is dwarfed Biden wants in this package for Ukraine. So what you said doesn't make any sense, Michael, with all due respect. And if there was no Ukraine war going on, I think what's holding it up in the Senate, to be honest with you, is that the House also tied a cut. They found a way to pay for it by cutting IRS agents that were going to be hired. That what's holding it up in the Senate more than just it's an individual package for Israel.
But Steve, you don't have the Congress, or I should say, you don't have Ukraine having our two fleets to back it up directly, simply because we don't have an opposite like Russia in Ukraine to go up against, and so that costs a lot of money. This thing came on so suddenly. I think that if they could get that the initial money in addition to what they get now, if they're going to be getting all of the other arms that we provide, and they do get open-ended assistance. It's much more than you really see. So consequently, the Ukrainian thing is something that has got to take a back seat at this point. First of all, we don't have the our stockpiles are draining.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the question. Is Washington, D.C. ready to see Ukraine take the back seat? Have they been looking for an out? But that's a question we're going to have to hold over for another show. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me on this conversation. Now, there is no predetermined timeline or even a magic eight ball to predict what will happen next in the conflict between Israel and Gaza. However, if history has taught us anything, the only known factor is as long as the West is involved in the conflict, there will be no peace in the Middle East. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thanks for watching.